Hey everyone, it's Jacqueline Melanick. Welcome to Chain Reaction, a show that unpacks and dives deep into the latest trends and news, breaking things down block by block for the crypto curious. This year, we're doing monthly series diving into different topics and themes in crypto. Last month was NFTs, and this month we're focusing on blockchains integrating AI. We're speaking to a number of founders and startups about how they're looking at the two technologies, what are the best ways to bring AI on chain, and the benefits that are yet to come from it. Hope you enjoy. Today's guest is Dee Goins, the co-founder of Zora. Zora is a platform and protocol that helps developers and creators bring their ideas on-chain and on Ethereum through an open and shared environment. The platform has minted over 4 million NFTs and has over $300 million in secondary sales to date. Dee previously worked at Coinbase for 2.5 years doing risk management, operations, and brand partnerships. And before that, he analyzed emerging technology risks with a specialization in the blockchain sector for KPMG. We think Dee is a great guest to kick off this month's AI and blockchain series because we just wrapped up our NFT series, and now we're moving into this, which is something I know he's working on bridging the gap with his co-founder, Jacob Horn. We're also minting this podcast on Zora, which is a first for us, so we'll link that in the show notes for you to check it out there too. Anyways, before I give too much away, Dee, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Jacqueline. I really appreciate you inviting us.
Yeah, for sure. Happy to have you too. And I briefly explained Zora in the intro to start, but it's your company. Where did the idea come from and how did you even get into this?
Yeah, so we've always wanted to help creators to capture more value from the work that they're putting on the internet. The way that we're approaching Zora today is very much like a new social network. So to us, we actually say that, like Zora is a new social network. We help creators, brands, and artists to monetize or better monetize their content engagement. We do that through this magical process called minting. I'll get into more of that later. But minting also helps the artists and the creators that use Zora to deepen the relationships that they have with their audience. And so we currently have 51,000 active creators on Zora as of the last month. In February, we actually had just under 500,000 monthly transacting users, which is pretty crazy. I think it was like 478,000 or something like that. And just in the last 30 days, creators on Zora have actually made over $1.3 million just posting their content on Zora. And so we're a social network where you can get paid to post your media on our network by fans and audience members that are super excited to engage your content.
All right. Well, those are the updated numbers. Beats out my intro.
But yeah, growth is real.
Well, yeah. I mean, and that's an amazing thing, right? How do you kind of find community and where did this growth come from? Like, was it on the ground or word of mouth?
Yeah, great question. I think it's a combination of factors. We've been around for the last 4 years, and the majority of that time has been spent directly with on the front lines with creators. So trying to build the best tools that we can and trying to make it as easy as we can for them to bring their work on chain, as well as for collectors, making it easy for them to engage this content in a really exciting and engaging way. And so a lot of the sort of sweat equity that went into 2 to 3 years of building for these communities of creators and collectors has sort of compounded into the growth that we see today. It's a combination of sort of manual onboarding, but also like some pretty lucrative and enticing incentives with our protocol rewards model. So last year, we actually launched a new economic model called Protocol Rewards, in which creators who post on Zora will earn anytime somebody clicks the mint button, which is effectively like sending that creator like a super like. Mm. You could think of this kind of like spending your coins on TikTok in order to have Pinky Doll wear like the crazy cowboy hat or, you know, sending a badge on Instagram to get featured in the live. A mint is kind of like a super like in that same way, only you can super like any post on the internet, i.e. any post on Zora. So we launched this new economic model in which creators were actually able to get paid without pricing their media when they posted on Zora. And it turned out to be pretty sticky. Creators really love it. Like I said, they made over $1.3 million. It brings them back to the platform. And then the economic model also includes some affiliate and referral rewards, which have helped to grow our distribution. And so if you're a developer that has built a platform on top of Zora in order to find new collectors or new people to engage with content, you actually get paid per mint as well. And then you get a guaranteed 0.0011 ETH for every mint that you find through your interface. And so now there's like tens of teams, sure soon to be hundreds of teams, that are building on top of the Zora protocol in order to push the content as far and as wide as they can to new collectors. And so I think it's a combination of we spent a lot of time figuring out the needs of this particular community. We built and created value around those needs. And then we also built an economic model that is positive sum across the board, rewards the creators, provides an incentive for distribution, which has helped us to grow in a major way.
Right.
I guess the last bucket too is we actually serve a pretty unique customer or user at times, which is like the brands. So if you have a brand like Coinbase or Layer Zero, who have really, really big audiences, they do a lot of their product marketing on Zora. And so they're bringing hundreds of thousands of new users and new collectors to the platform who are excited to engage with branded media. And so we've been able to grow significantly from those mints and fortunately have been able to retain a lot of those collectors. D30 retention yesterday at Zora was 73.8%, which is like absurd. I get just 73.8% D30 retention is absurd. Yeah. Like that's wild. Yeah, that's what we've got as a result of, you know, this cool system rewarding creators and collectors for participating. So
when you say minting, are you saying like this is an NFT mint or using the term differently?
Oh, pretty close. So I actually use mint to mean like post.
Okay.
Like you can think, let's demystify the word mint.
Because when I say mint, I think of it's like minting an NFT on the blockchain. So it could be bought or sold. So,
I mean, that happens.
Yeah.
But I feel like people get caught up in the jargon. So like minting really is just posting.
Okay.
Like when I click the mint button on Zora, I'm just posting to the Zora social network. When I click the mint button on any other marketplace, I'm actually just posting it to that marketplace. It just so happens that that picture is now made with the crypto material that allows it to be transacted, owned, and sent on a blockchain, right? But it's really just posting. And then on the collector side, when I click the mint button, I'm really just liking it. Like I said earlier, it's kind of like a super like you would see on TikTok, or a super like that you would see when you send a badge on Instagram. By the way, TikTok did $10 billion worth of sales. Like consumers spent $10 billion on TikTok last year, and a quarter of that spend, I guess that's like $2.5-3 billion, was actually on coins to engage or super like content that they like. Mm-hmm. This isn't too different, where it's like as a collector, when I click that mint button, I'm actually just super liking the video or the podcast that I just watched. And it has a little bit of money that I'm sending to the creator to support them.
Right.
But like, that's how I like to think of it. It's like it's posting and super liking.
Yeah. But the margins on like these Web2 platforms are just like awful for creators. And I'm sure it's like way better for...
Well, yeah, I think TikTok keeps... Don't quote me on this because I don't have the hard stat in front of me, but I think on the way, so like on the way out, they keep like 50%.
It's a lot. It's majority. Like YouTube is one of the only ones that gives a fair amount.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Compared to other creators. And that's like a big thing in Web3, you know, that's what's trying to be fixed for sure, to like monetize or help monetize more for creators. Anyway.
That's why we're so excited about protocol rewards. Yeah.
There you go. No, everyone loves rewards. Everyone loves points, and, you know, for a good reason. But to hone in on the theme of the month, how do you and your co-founder, Jacob, see blockchains and AI working together on a high level? And what role specifically can creators, NFTs, and so on, or AI-generated artwork play in that?
Yeah, Jacob actually just wrote an essay about a month ago called AI Plus. You can check it out on zora.co/writings/AI-plus. Or if you just go to zora.co/about, you can find it at the bottom of our about page. He put like the whole sort of blockchain AI intersection pretty simply in like two statements. It's like the first one is crypto wants information to be on chain so that it can be valued and add value to the system. And then AI wants information to be on chain so that it can be freely accessed and utilized by the system. And so like we're on this like kind of collision course where we want to put more stuff on chain in order to effectively add value, create value around that information, data, media, and AI actually needs access to that information in order to train its models. So it's like it also needs some sort of economic or value system to help to fit that need. And so his essay actually, it lays out a pretty compelling framework with sort of three pillars of a system. And like just zooming out, this is sort of how we've approached AI, generally speaking, at Zora. We've actually got like a pretty long history of AI at Zora, like back in 2022, we actually helped Holly Herndon and Matt Dryhurst to mint the Holly Plus models on Zora, like literally the entire voice model. I think there was a singing model and then a voice model both minted on Zora. And so that's on like the model side. On the tool side, we've also helped teams like Opepin Art to build their sort of generative tooling that allows people to imagine derivative artworks of Jack Butcher's iconic Opepin collection. And we've even had other platforms and tools built on top of Zora, like Tidals, which allow people to create remixes and their own models on a mobile app, all built on Zora. And so we sort of have this historical pedigree, if you will, at ushering in sort of the intersection of blockchains and AI. And this is the framework that we've used to sort of approach it. It's sort of like those three buckets, if you will. There's the models bucket, which is sort of like all of the actual models that help us to create these amazing artworks, or all of these hallucinations, as they say for DALL-E. So you have all of the models, right? We're helping to bring those on chain, like with Holly Plus, and that includes the training data as well. And then you've got all of the sort of tools, which are effectively the interfaces. So if you think about Midjourney, this is the Discord bot. If you think about what we're launching today at Zora, it's the Zora Create Flow, where as of today, you're actually able to create new images with Stability AI's API. More on that later. And then you've actually got the output, which are like the images, or let's call it the videos from Sora, the OpenAI, you know, video generative platform. You've got the outputs as well. The way that we think is all three of those buckets, the models themselves, the tools, and the output are eventually going to find their way on chain. And we're actually trying to build the ability for all of these things to live on chain. And it's like, what's the upside of putting them on chain? One is like actually the attribution. Two is the actual ownership of our training data, as well as the economics for the output. Fred Wilson writes a lot about this, where whether it's OpenAI and their New York Times lawsuit, or if it's any of the companies that have effectively helped to produce the data that these models are trained on, that's like a whole business, you know? And so we're going to need some way to own that data on chain, which is where that cool crypto material comes in again, where it's like, oh, I can actually mint my training data. So we want a way to bring that on chain. And then the output is proven to be extremely valuable. Jacob cites an example in his essay of Robbie Barrett's 2018 super rare artwork selling for hundreds of thousands of dollars. We've even seen output like AI film creators like Ja, a pretty iconic and, you know, increasingly established filmmaker from the Zora ecosystem. He actually sold a film called Helmet City as an open edition, or even the trailer, and made like 6.5 to 7 ETH on that. And so the output is valuable too. We need systems effectively that can help to bring all of these things on chain. And so that's what we're trying to do at Zora, and how we imagine our sort of place in ushering in the transition of AI on chain.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. On that note, what is Zora currently working on with AI to expand its platform's functions? I mean, you guys have been in the space for a while now. Obviously, Jacob's essay kind of cites that, and we'll put it in the show notes too for people. But what are you working on today that is kind of bringing it to that next step?
Yeah, so today we actually launched the ability to create using AI models in the Zora Create Flow. So as of today, you can go to zora.co/create and you can actually make, you can go text to image to mint. So you can use the Stability AI API in order to generate a new image in our canvas tool on our Create Flow that you can then mint. What makes this super unique is that we have actually built in splits, on-chain splits, for the creators of both the Stability AI model, which we're using to generate our images, as well as FAL, the system that provides us with the inferences. And so this is actually a 0-to-1 moment on the first passive income stream for the creators of large language models like Stability AI, where now you actually have the ability to capture value from your model's output. As I said earlier, there's filmmakers who are making films that are making, you know, 6 to 7 ETH. There are artworks that are getting generated and sold for hundreds of ETH. It'd be great for the model makers to have a way to capture value. We've actually built that into our system at Zora. And so we've got programmatic splits for Stability AI, as well as FAL. And then we're also taking all of the prompt data. And so when you type in your prompt into the little text box on Zora to imagine a new piece of media that you will mint, that prompt is actually stored on chain as well, along with the name of the model that you used for provenance reasons as well. And so we have all of the sort of attribution coming on chain along with the output. And so we actually just launched that today. I think the tweet is going out while I'm recording this podcast with you. And so you're kind of hearing it first, which is really exciting. But yeah, we're really excited to sort of usher in an era where model creators, not just the creators of the output, but the model makers themselves, also have a way to reap the rewards of the creativity that they're helping to produce.
Got it. Okay. To follow up on that, I had a few questions. First of all, what is splits? I'm not an AI expert. I don't know what splits are. I'm sure some of my listeners might not. And then you also used another term. I think it was FAL. Maybe? Can you kind of explain what those things are just for us? And then we'll go into a few other questions.
Yeah, sure. So I'll start with splits. So splits are the programmatic on-chain way that we share earnings with different participants in a mint on Zora, okay, or really on-chain. And so let's say, for example, you and I, like Dee and Jacqueline, decided that they were going to mint this podcast episode and they wanted to go 50-50 on Zora's protocol rewards. By the way, we should definitely mint podcast episode. Yeah, that would be a...
Yeah, it'll be a first for us.
Oh, what? 0-to-1. That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
So the way that splits would work is, since you and I collaborated on the podcast, when we go to mint it, we can actually set the payout, i.e. the rewards that we receive when people super like our episode, we can set the payout to be split between us automatically. So like 50% of the rewards would go to you, 50% of the rewards would go to me. What makes this unique in being on chain is that that happens automatically. There's not any sort of like legal or contractual document you got to go sign. There's not like some fancy middleman that we got to go ask to hold the funds. All of this happens programmatically and transparently at the time of mint. Makes it super unique. And so why this is important for the model makers and the inference providers, FAL, just to take a step back, they're just an inference provider. Now, I am not an AI expert by any means either, but they help to infer the results from the model to meet what the user is expecting effectively. There's probably a whole deep dive you can do on inferences that we'll need, but that's like the sort of high level understanding that I, as the non-PED person,
we're learning,
right?
Yeah.
So in the case of the Zora AI tooling, both Stability AI and FAL are listed as split recipients for anything that is created using the tool. So let's say we decide to generate a cover for our episode using the AI tool. Stability AI and FAL will automatically receive 10% each from the rewards that we earn when people super like that post on Zora. Follow?
Yeah, 100%. That's super interesting.
Okay, cool.
With the percentages, is that made up by the people who post it themselves or mint it? Or is that kind of like preset?
Yeah, so we have set a minimum split with the Stability AI team and the FAL team at 10%. If you were to create something on Zora that wasn't AI native or AI related, you could actually set that split yourself. And so we've had mints before where we've set it to 10% or 20%, or maybe even sometimes we really just want to do, we want to bless somebody, right? So like Zora will actually set its take to 0%, and then we'll pick a random creator out in the ecosystem and they get 100%. And so you can actually set it to what you would like.
All right. Awesome. And what do you think that the response has been like from the community, developers, and, you know, the AI like startups that you've been working with? Like, is this something that you see a lot of demand for? And how has that kind of shifted?
So I would say a lot of demand from the creator side for sure.
They're all separate buckets. So yeah, feel free to like look at it separately.
Yeah. So like from the creator or consumer side, like I said before, we saw a lot of adoption of the AI tools by Zora creators. People who didn't have full production capabilities but wanted to make films were able to use these tools in order to go 0-1 on a film. People who didn't have the ability to have scores were able to go 0-1 on scores and all of these other things. I was able to go 0-1 on really cool images, right? And so the consumer demand from the creator side has always been there. I think the splits that Stability AI and FAL receive, FAL is super excited about this. You know, they sent their wallet address. We know a lot of those guys from previous Coinbase days. They were stoked. You know, I think they were excited. And like, it's basically free money. Like, these are good economics for the model creators. It's like, hey, here's a new way that you can capture value from your amazing outputs, right? So it's kind of all upside for them. For some of the larger teams, like model makers, I think they're still, we're still grokking, just like, wait, this is kind of crazy in terms of the potential here.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do we handle this new form of income and revenue? Yeah. I don't think that they had expected to be able to make money on the output the same way that they make money on, like, let's say a subscription or like a license to the API. And so this is actually a, like a net new thing in many ways. And so I think they're excited to innovate.
Right.
You know, when we talk to the Stability AI team, they're really pushing the whole open source thing. They're really excited about more and more people getting more access to the models. They're excited to see us innovate. I think they're curious to see how these economics play out long term.
What other ways do you see crypto and AI kind of being complementary technologies to one another? Like, we have, there's surprises from the people you just mentioned that this is even possible, but like, what are you looking at to the future?
Yeah, I think the future is kind of, it's going to get crazy, right? It's going to be
crazy futuristic world we're going to be in. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I genuinely think it's going to be wild, and we're going to live in a world where it's going to be very valuable to have verified, provable origination of media.
Yeah.
Right. Like, really knowing that this came from a cryptographically proved D could be increasingly important in the future, where the ability to sort of create a mirage of me is like, is fairly available to people. And so I'm really excited about the opportunity for crypto to really help to verify, authenticate, and prove the ownership, not just of like the models and data and information, but like the origin of the media itself. I think that's super important. This is like my personal take on how I view sort of the models. Like as a person who really loves using image to image as well as like text to image models, I really find there to be a beauty of like learning how to use the model. And I liken it to like learning how to use an instrument. You know, like to me, Midjourney is like a Fender guitar, or it's like one type of piano versus DALL-E being an acoustic guitar and a whole another type of piano, but they both produce music, in this case, images, right? And I actually think there's a world where like bringing on the sort of the Fender patent for that guitar, like that's like minting the model to me, mm-hmm. where I think we're pushing into a place where crypto's ability to prove ownership and aggregate or like create the propensity for value seems to be on a collision course with like the IP system. It's like crypto will do for the IP system and copyright what it did for fiat in the financial system. And it could be that like that is most needed today, where I could go generate an image of the Pope in a Montclair bubble and you might think it's real. You know, like, and so,
honestly, and so I do think. Maybe not that, but yeah.
Yeah, just like mathematical, cryptographically proven origin of media, source of media, ownership of media, and value of media feels increasingly important when our ability to proliferate media is about to hockey stick thanks to these tools.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it reminds me of like, I saw this like TikTok the other day, and it was talking about how older people on Facebook can't differentiate AI from real photos. And I'm not saying anything towards older people. You know, maybe I can't differentiate as well. Maybe I can. But you know what I mean? When it like you need to validate these things or be able to like prove that it's like valid and that you created it or that you created this with this technology. Like, you know, either or. I think that's totally fair. When it comes to using this, how easy is it for someone to use? Is it like they could just type it in like people do on ChatGPT, or is it harder for someone who knows nothing about this?
Nah, you can just type it in like you do on ChatGPT. So if you go to zora.co/create and you click, there's a button that says try Canvas. I'm doing this blind. I don't have it up on the screen. But there's a button that says try Canvas. If you click that button, you'll see a little text box at the bottom that says imagine, and you can type in there and actually imagine an image that you can then mint. I like to think we're going text to image to mint. It's kind of like mint is now a part of that flow. You know, people are like, it's image to image, it's text to image to video, like all that stuff. I feel like the last step of that whole thing now is just like, we're going text to image to mint.
Yeah.
And you can do that on Zora. And you can get started with just an email. Like you don't need, we spent a lot of time last year abstracting away some of the more complex, you know, crypto components to these flows
to make it more accessible.
Yeah. And so like for newcomers to the space, like you can actually sign up to Zora with just an email. You can get started creating for free. You don't actually need any ETH in your wallet to get started creating. And so it's a very approachable new user experience for like a first time user.
There we go. So the people listening, think about what you want to create, and we'll take a quick break. And before we get into the rapid fire segment, and we are back. Now it's time for our rapid fire segment where I'll ask D some questions. Hopefully he gives us some quick responses.
Cool.
To start, D, what is your favorite NFT collection right now?
Whoa.
First one that came to mind.
I mean, the first one that came to mind is Nouns. I just always will forever love Nouns. It's like, I think good things in crypto should win. Nouns is a good thing. It is trying to do earnestly good things in crypto. I want to see Nouns win. I think they can win. That's probably the one that was top of mind. And then the other one was I'm Tired of Being Hyper Surveilled, which is a collection by an artist that I'm very, very close to, Henno. He's got a new album that he's releasing, and the whole project is actually getting debuted or shown at South by Southwest this week and next week. And so that's very top of mind for me too, is Henno's collection.
That's sick.
Yeah.
I love that. We had Maria Shen from Electric Capital on, and she also talked about Nouns.
Oh, cool.
So it feels like that's a hot topic for sure. Next question. Would you rather have a collection that's limited in quantity, say like 1,000 NFTs, because that's limited in this space, or massive, like 1,000,000 NFTs?
Massive 1,000,000 NFTs. I'm trying to reach as many people as we can.
I like that.
Okay. I'm not like a super fine artist, you know, driving scarce demand. Like I would love for us to have as many people actively minting as YouTube has actively viewing stuff every month, which is like 2.5 billion people. Like, I want NFTs to reach a lot of people.
Grow the pie.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And then what's one word you'd use to describe the present day of Zora?
Oh, that's such a good question.
Thank you.
One word is hard. You know, like, I think we're in a really, we've been around so long. Like, wow, this, I wouldn't say this. I can't say this on wax, but like, we've been around for 4 years. I would say like, we're ready to graduate. Like, that's how I feel. Mm. Like we've been around for a while. We've seen auctions, one of ones, editions. We've seen checks, punk auctions, you name it. We've seen so much in the space. I think we are well positioned and right on time for this moment to do the most amazing shit that we could have ever dreamed of for creators and people on the internet. Even like today, like I'm doing an interview or a podcast with TechCrunch about AI and crypto, the day that we release an AI tool. Like, that's pretty wild. So like, I think we're right on time. Maybe that's how I would say it. Right on time.
Right on time. One quick word, right on time. And to follow that, what would be, well, it's going to be a follow-up here too, is what would be one word, or I'll give you a sentence because I think a word was a little tough, to describe what the future of what Zora will be?
Ooh, internet scale.
I like
or
that.
Or I feel like this, my Virgo brain is kicking in. I'm feeling all
I'm
types
of. I'm a Virgo
of,
too.
Oh, really? Cool. Early September? Yeah. Late September?
Early September.
I'm 9-9, September 9th.
Oh, I'm the 12th.
Nice. Same neighborhood.
Wow. Look at that.
Yeah, I would say, or maybe there's all sorts of like cool words I want to think of now, but I do feel like we're right on time for crypto's growth, like to actually hit internet scale. And like Zora is, it's like not crypto for a lot of people, but it is, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, looking at Zora's like website and everything, or platform, however you want to phrase it, like I really do feel like it has this cooler futuristic vibe than like a lot of NFT platforms. And when you look at it, like, I don't know, it just feels more like hypey, like in a good way.
Cool.
Like
yeah.
It's unique, it's original.
Oh, thank you so much.
I think it has like its own brand. Like if I saw some art, I would probably be able to say that it came from Zora, opposed to, I don't know, OpenSea or Magic Eden or something, where they have so much like general NFT art that, you know, is more that side of things. So
wow, I really appreciate that. We've made a conscious effort in the last couple of years, particularly, to build an experience that feels a little less like a marketplace, a little more social, a little more approachable for like the non crypto native user. And so to hear these things, it's really encouraging. I really appreciate that. And I'll send all of that love back to the brand marketing and design team too.
Yeah. I guess the follow-up question to that, we're still in the rapid fire for the people listening. They're probably like, what happened? But
yeah, sorry.
No, you're good. Brand or community, which one do you think is more important? I know they both are. This is something we've talked about with the NFT guests, but for you guys, like really, what are you honing in on the most to kind of keep scaling Zora in that sense?
These are good. Nice, Jacqueline. These are good. I feel like brand has a unique ability to represent, galvanize, and attract a community.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like the flag, if you will. And like, yeah, you need the early initial group, like the sort of founding crew of that community to form and congeal and like really turn into something that is durable and long lasting. But they also need the sort of flag or banner to carry that makes them feel community, like the sort of like thing that signals their unity. And I think like crafting that with the intention of honestly, earnestly, and innovatively representing those people, like that community, like that can carry you pretty far. And in fact, like our brand building exercise, if you go back to 2021, was actually done alongside our community. We did the entire first round of Zora's brand design on a YouTube live stream with Ben Pierrat and his design team to create the Zorb. Like that's where the Zorb got made. That's where our wordmark got made. Like we literally did it alongside the community. And so it's so difficult. Like it's almost chicken and eggy, like which one comes before the other, because they feel so like intertwined with one another. But I do think like a good brand, a good symbol, a good flag can galvanize a group of people to do amazing things. And so I kind of want to say brand.
I would say, yeah.
Yeah, so I want to say brand because I think that's like an instrument that you use to build and grow community. One is a means to the other almost.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And if you do community without the sort of overarching brand, you might wind up in the sort of DAO conundrum where you don't exactly know which expression, be it visual, be it language-based, you don't know which expression best encapsulates it. So it's kind of nice to have that flag coming in because it sort of sets a tone. So I'm gonna go with brand as an instrument.
Okay. And the last question, I guess this could kind of be like a segue out of rapid fire because you'll probably give a longer answer is my guess. But which one do you think is more true, that AI needs blockchain more than blockchain needs AI, or that blockchain needs AI more than AI needs blockchain? Like, which one do you think kind of really is holding on to the other more so? Or do you think, no, you're going to have to answer it that way. I'm not going to let you say it's mutual.
Yeah. I appreciate the, remove the cop-out.
Yeah, right.
I'm going to go with the former. Like, AI needs blockchains. And I think it needs that in order to bolster its narrative around sort of safety and verification and authentication and sort of provenance and all of those things. Even if you think about like the way that like open source models could work, I was just on a call earlier today with Steve Jang from Kindred, and he was reflecting on a conversation he had recently where it's like the sort of lineage or web, like the Darwinian evolution of some of these models is also cool to see publicly. And there's currently no real way that you could do that. If the models were on chain and each variation of the model was effectively recorded as a sort of derivative, and we could see all of that publicly available on chain and see which model is actually generating more rewards or has more, that would be an amazing level of legibility. And so on top of the sort of authentication and verification that we need just to, you know, I'm not here trying to fearmonger or whatever, but like there is like an element of like, how do I know this is actually a real thing from a real person? How can I trust some of this media? And I think crypto is uniquely positioned to cryptographically verify ownership and origin of information. And I think crypto could also survive without AI in its current trajectory, maybe. I don't think it needs it as much as like, I think society really needs AI and crypto to intersect.
Well, because we're like cryptographically proving things. Yeah.
Yeah.
I understand that, like, what you're saying for sure.
That we need to know. So I feel like they're on a collision course, really.
Mm-hmm. I guess as they're kind of integrating, how can crypto remain decentralized enough to withhold that ethos of decentralization and no like centralized power, while still making sure that as AI is adopted more and more, even though AI in a sense isn't really one specific person or entity, you could argue, like at the end of the day, they can pick and choose what the response is. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure you've seen all the news recently, or even with like ChatGPT, like the way they certain like reply to things, or with Gemini, like Google's Gemini. It's in a way like a technology, but on the back end, there are people. So how do you kind of keep it decentralized?
Yeah.
So it holds on to like that crypto-centric thing that we all know.
Yeah, that's a great question. Being able to see, because like right now, a lot of the best and most widely adopted models are still in many ways in like closed source ecosystems. They're not accessible to the broader public. And part of that is why you saw, you know, platforms like an X be like, hey, we want to turn off our APIs here because like these dudes are training their models on our data and these models are closed source. We can't even see or contribute to them. And again, I'm no expert, so this is all under a disclaimer. But like, I do think in that world, and similarly so to the stories that you're alluding to, it's very nice to really understand and see the underpinnings, inner workings, and sort of configurations of these models. And this is where, again, like inference providers too can come into play, where like it'd be great to have different lenses even on top of models. So I think like I'm excited to see the models on chain or see more open sourcing of these models so that we can all have the opportunity to investigate and inspect them in a way where we can make an informed decision. Do I want to use model A or model B? Similar to my instrument choice earlier, where it's like, I might want something that sounds a bit warmer, fuller body. Like I might want different tones, different strings, different materials, different woods for this guitar versus that one, right? And so I think we need greater transparency around all of the inputs that you're describing, which help to produce the outputs that we may see in order to make these decisions. And putting them on chain is a way for everybody to be able to make that public decentralized level of consensus or achieve that level of consensus. And then it's cool too, we'll be able to see also, at least on Zora, you know, we're starting out with just the SDXL API and like Stable Diffusion and FAL, but like we'll be adding additional models and additional model types, including some that are a bit more specific to types of data, types of photography, types of images, etc. So I think you'll also start to see an increasing amount of like the proof is in the pudding and like what models are people choosing? Like, are people actually choosing publicly and on-chain transparently model one versus model two? And like, are they choosing that because these outputs have those different weights that you're describing, right? Like, I actually think equipping the end user and consumers with as much information, legibility, and transparency as we can, which like putting these things on chain to some extent does, is going to be one of the most important things so that we actually understand, like, it manages the user's expectations. What am I actually getting out of this? You know? So then if I show up to the model and I type in one string expecting to get the color blue and it shows me the color red, mm-hmm. at least I know, oh, this model's trained to give me the opposite of what I said, right? Like, just knowing that kind of stuff would be good going in.
Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of people know any of that. They show up and you kind of are surprised each time by the serendipity of the of whatever you see. And it's to the point where like they call them hallucinations. So it's like, I kind of like to know a bit more predictably what I'm going to see.
No, that would make sense.
And like how you arrived at that image, you know? So I think more transparency there is really important, putting more of these things on chain so that we can see observably who's choosing what is another part. And then also like that opens up an opportunity for us to kind of put our money where our mouth is, which is like, hey, if you're weighting these things to produce outputs, which I don't agree with, I'm going to go spend my money on models that produce outputs that I do agree with.
Sure. Yeah. Take your business elsewhere. Given that you have a history in risk management, I'm curious, like, what are your, we're going to bring it back years and years ago. I mean, we brought it up
crazy,
in the intro.
Scary setup. Here we go.
What are your ethical or risk concerns for NFT artists specifically using AI, if any?
We sort of addressed some of them, which is like attribution and shared economics, like making sure that the outputs that are created are giving the right amount of due to the models that help them to create them, making sure the creators of the models as well as the creators of the outputs can actually benefit from these things, which hopefully can help us to dissuade or avoid any sort of like, oh, copycat risks, oh, this person stole my thing, that kind of stuff.
I mean, we already kind of see that today without AI. People complain about that anyways.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Remixing is a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, we've done as much, and I'm sure there's more that we will uncover that we can do. But when you're creating on Zora, at least, we try to do our best to make sure that there's some element of automation to share economics with original creators. And so even in our Canvas tool, we are actually able to remix an NFT that you have in your wallet. We still build in an automatic split to the creator of that NFT in the event that you decide to use it in a remix. And so I think there's a lot of intentionality that has to happen where it's like, you have to be aware of the opportunity to earn from posting this work on Zora and those earnings coming at the expense of a creator that might be the source creator of your remix, right? Like, you just have to be very aware of that. And build in ways that these creators can have shared economics and attribution. Like, that's like the one thing that we want to always make sure that we're doing as best as we can.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's on the Zora side. That to me is probably like the most principled place for me to focus on.
I think to wrap things up, Dee, I would love if you could leave us with a piece of advice, maybe something that you've carried with you throughout your career or related to the conversation today.
Yeah, sure. I actually wrote a blog post called Start Here, which has 9 pieces of advice in it for anyone who's looking to get started on chain or anyone who's looking to get started creating.
Can we get one piece here? 1 of the 9?
Yeah, I would say don't be precious. Like, use these chains and Zora as a place to express your wildest, freest, most full creative expressions. I actually think that minting on Zora, posting on Zora, like, I would love for that to be a place where people can have, you know, radically free expression. Like, you can just really post anything. That's why we support so many different types of creation, photography, writing, music, you name it. And so don't be so precious or feel like you have to like figure out the perfect mint. Maybe that's the advice. There is no perfect mint. The perfect mint is your next mint. I think that's like the best way to say it. Like, just actually mint. Take that first step. Like, try it out. Because it's simultaneously like a really big deal, but it's also just when you first do it, like you finally do it, it's like not that big of a deal at all. So yeah, don't be afraid to like actually make that first mint, make that first post. Don't be so precious.
I love that.
And this probably is true of any content creator or any artist. You know, like, I used to make a bunch of music and there's a bunch of songs that nobody's ever heard. And it's like, are they even good songs? And nobody's heard them. You know, I got to share them. So yeah. I think to that point, it's like, yeah, share your work, post it, feel free.
Love that.
Don't be so precious.
Dee, thank you so much for coming on today and sharing all of this with us.
Yeah, I hope that it was interesting for the listeners out there. And yeah, check us out on Zora.
Perfect.
Thank you, Jacqueline.
Thanks again. We'll be back next week with conversations around what's going on in the wild world of Web3 with top players in the crypto ecosystem. You can keep up with us on Spotify, Apple Music, or your favorite pod platform, and subscribe to our companion newsletter, also called Chain Reaction. Links to the newsletter and stories we talked about can be found in our show notes, and be sure to follow us at @Chain_Reaction on Twitter. Chain Reaction is hosted by myself, Jacqueline Melanick, and produced by Maggie Stamets, with assistance from Yashad Kulkarni and editing by Kel. Bryce Durbin is our illustrator, and Henry Picavet manages TechCrunch audio products. Thanks for listening in. See you next time.